It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Monson. We've got a great show planned for you today. Be sure and go over to our website and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent podcast and our most recent op-eds. We appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. And big show planned for you today. We'll be talking with George Teal in this first segment. He is a candidate for Douglas County Commissioner. Second segment, Professor John Eastman. He is the visiting professor at CU of conservative thought and policy. He's a constitutional expert. He's on national TV, writes nationally. And we're going to ask him the question about if this election is delayed, the results are delayed, could, in fact, Nancy Pelosi become president? So we'll ask him about that. In studio with me is Lyle Laverty. Lyle, it's great to have you here.
Thank you, Kim. Good to be here.
Big topic that we'll be talking about, and that is forest fires. And you are the former Assistant Secretary of the Interior, so you probably know a few things about this, Lyle.
We look forward to a conversation.
It'll be a great conversation for sure. A couple of things. First of all, for those of you that emailed me regarding getting a complimentary copy of Unmasked 2020, we had Kevin Lundberg on yesterday. He's one of the co-editors. I will be getting back with all of you that emailed me, and actually all of you that emailed me yesterday, and it was a lot more than five people. We are actually going to give every one of you a complimentary electronic copy of Unmasked because you reached out yesterday. So I will get to that to you guys a little bit later. This Monday night, this upcoming Monday, September 28th, Rick Turnquest and I will be introducing our voter's guide on all of the issues, on the amendments and propositions that are on the Colorado ballot. And very important that you understand these things. So we're having an event at Water's Edge Winery this Monday. It's 5:30 to 8 p.m. You can go to my website, Kim Monson, M-O-N-S-O-N, to buy your tickets. Tickets are $20, $3 processing fee above that, and then you can purchase your food and drink a la carte. We'd love to have you join us. We will be cutting the ticket sales off at a certain number of people. But we'd love to have you join us, so I'd recommend that you go ahead and get over there and do that. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. And before we jump in here, I always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And to each of you listeners, you're each you're treasured, you're valued. Today, be the very best version of yourself that you can be. Our quote, I was looking for Forrest quotes because Lyle is in studio with me today, and I found a great quote that we'll have at the end of the show regarding forests from Robert Louis Stevenson. But this other quote I just thought was amazing, so I wanted to share that with you. And Robert Louis Stevenson was a Scottish novelist, poet, and travel writer, most noted for Treasure Island, Kidnapped, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and A Child's Garden of Verses. He was born and educated in Edinburgh, and he suffered from a serious bronchial trouble for much of his life, but he continued to travel and write prolifically, even in defiance of his poor health. He was only 44 years old when he passed on. He was born in 1850. He died in 1894. So, Steve, I think you're going to like this. I mean, this is very, it's a big quote. It says, the best things are nearest. Breath in your nostrils, light in your eyes, flowers at your feet, duties at your hand, the path of God just before you. Then do not grasp at the stars, but do life's plain common work as it comes, certain that daily duties and daily bread are the sweetest things of life. Isn't that great?
For the common man, that is awesome.
I thought that was just terrific. So before we get over to George Teal, one of the headlines that Patty's had on this last few days is, and Patty's done extensive study on the number of subsidies that, and you hate to say given, awarded or whatever, but that the state of Colorado has given to their breaks, basically, tax incentives or breaks, so they don't have to pay all the taxes or you know, maybe they get a break on rules and regulations, but this was primarily taxes. It's been over $1 billion since 2016.
Yeah, keeping a running tally there for whatever period of time we were looking at. And when it went over the $1 billion mark, you really had to start scratching your head.
Most definitely. But so we do not think anybody should get incentives. We think that if, in fact, for a big corporation, they're normally the ones that get the breaks, if they can do better business paying lower taxes, we think everybody could do better if they were paying lower taxes. So instead of awarding deals to some companies and not to others, lower taxes across the spectrum. But a recent, now I can't find it exactly, but there has been an award of, I think it's about $500,000 that has been given to a marijuana company, which we just thought that was very interesting, Steve.
Of all the, I mean, we, again, back to that list that you guys were keeping, these were everyday, irregardless of the size of the corporation, you know, handouts. But this particular industry really gets my goat. The marijuana industry? Are you kidding me? Ever since 2014, they've been making money hand over fist. Why do they need $500,000 or more from the state?
Well, you know, and the other thing about it, Steve, is now the state of Colorado is picking winners and losers in the marijuana business. And that's not fair. Now, one of the things that Rick and I are going to have in our voter's guide is a reference where you, Patty actually found the website that goes through the different corporations that were awarded these different awards, I guess it is, the tax incentives. And we are going to have a link to that, so people will be able to actually link to that and find that in our voter's guide. This is going to be a really great voter's guide.
Well, again, the whole thing that I guess galls us the most is that dollar amount, that figure is revenue that the state is kind of pushing aside or deferring, and where are they going to make it up?
Right. They're not deferring it. They're going to be making it up from somebody else.
Your pocket, my pocket.
My pocket.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, hey, let's jump over here. George Teal is a candidate for Douglas County Commissioner. My friends, these are very, very important races. George Teal, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Kim. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
What are you seeing out on the campaign trail, George?
You know, Kim, really the same thing we've been seeing really the whole second half of the summer. People are getting sick of the COVID restrictions. They're getting sick and tired of the overregulation by unelected bureaucrats that we saw specifically here in Douglas County with the mask mandates coming down through Tri-County. You know, some people then say, well, you know, it's the governor who has the mask mandate that is going on right now, and he keeps extending that by executive order. But, you know, once again, I think we saw back in July when Tri-County pushed through the mask mandate, despite a one-person, you know, majority on that vote, that was the excuse that it took to have Governor Polis then go ahead and do a mask mandate for the whole state. If Tri-County hadn't fallen on that one, I just don't see Governor Polis taking that move. And then when are they going to end? You know, when is it going to be that ordinary citizens become criminals just because they don't wear a piece of cloth over their face? It was supposed to be a 30-day mask mandate. That was extended. It got extended again. I mean, what? Are we going to have executive orders running the state of Colorado for, what, months, years? You know, when is it actually going to end? Well, and considering we flattened the curve, come on, we're mission accomplished.
Well, most definitely. So the first thing we heard was we do not want to overrun the hospitals, mission accomplished. We want to flatten the curve, mission accomplished. And now I think it's really more about control. And, you know, certainly, George, if somebody is concerned about You know, they may be immunocompromised. Please, have the freedom to decide to wear a mask. But the mandates, that is something that we're super concerned about. And a great thing that this current Douglas County Board of Commissioners has done is they have really worked to get our restaurants back opened up in Douglas County. And so they've really worked to do that. And that is, you know, that's a really important job, George Teal. So what would you say are some contrasts between you and your opponent?
Well, talking about this subject, talking about Douglas County making the move to withdraw from Tri-County, all the work that our county commissioners have done to, you know, get our businesses opened up. If you talk to my Democrat opponent, why, she calls this a travesty. It's a travesty to seek local control over a subject like this with Tri-County and form our own Douglas County Health Department and our own Douglas County Health Board. Well, you know, Kim, you and I have served in local municipal government. The government closest to the people serves the people best. That's been a mantra in America for over 200 years. And no, my Democrat opponent, she thinks that's a travesty. I think the communist government, Pol Pot, killing millions in Cambodia. Now, that's a travesty. The communists in China killing millions of their own people. That's a travesty. The people of Douglas County asserting their rights and asserting local control, that's not a travesty. That's how America is supposed to work.
That's exactly right, George Teal. I am recommending that people are really paying attention. I'm recommending that people adopt a candidate. That would mean, you know, help them walk, you know, maybe sending out letters if they don't want to walk or making some phone calls. And George Teal, I know you're adoptable. So how could people adopt you?
I am adoptable. Thank you, Kim. Go to my webpage, georgefordougco.com. That's georgefordougco.com. I've got a place to sign up to volunteer. I do have a place to contribute, and all contributions are welcome. A lot of people like to say, well, you're a Republican running in Douglas County. It's a safe seat. I don't think that's the case this year, Kim. We're really seeing the Democrats coming for us. The Democrats would love to take a seat on the Douglas County Board of Commissioners, both myself and Commissioner Thomas. We can't take this race for granted. We've got to make sure we win it and keep Douglas County Republican.
You know, and George Teal, I just want to make a point. Both of your opponent and Laura's opponent, John Kellner's opponent, these girls have gone through a program called Emerge, and it's a Hillary Clinton program that they are wanting to get progressive women into offices. And there's a lot of big money behind it. They actually set these people, they train them, and they're very polished. They set them up with websites, they set them up with donors, and so that is who your opponent is, and people can actually, you can just go in and check Emerge and put a person's name in, and it'll come up what class they graduated from. But if you want to understand what that ideology is, Candy Sitabaka, who is on the Denver City Council, is a graduate of the Emerge program. That is the kind of stuff that they are teaching, defunding the police and socializing our cities. And so that is your opponent. That is Laura's opponent. That's John Kellner's opponent. And we see what is happening with those progressive policies that are playing out in these other cities out there. And that is not what I think the people of Douglas County want. And they need to understand that these girls are very polished. They can get up in front of a crowd and read the crowd and tell them what the crowd wants to hear. But ultimately, they are antithetical to what is Douglas County has been, George Teal.
Absolutely, Kim. The bottom line is that they're following their polling. It looks like there was a push poll out by Commissioner Thomas's opponent, and all of a sudden they're flipping. All of a sudden, no, they don't want to defund the police, when that's exactly where they started 2-3 months ago, is talking about defunding SROs or
right.
school resource officers in our schools. Nope, you talk to them now, oh, no, we would never do that. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been talking about, they've been going to BLM rallies, if you could call them that, here in Douglas County. And they talk about, yeah, let's look at defunding the police. Now, you ask them, no, no, we don't want to do that.
You
talk to Commissioner Thomas and I, we've been rock solid. We support police. We support the Sheriff's Department here in Douglas County. We support those guys that are on the front lines working every day to keep us safe.
To keep our communities safe, George Teal. And that's what I'm hearing is one of the number one things across the spectrum. And so I think it's important that people understand that you are one to stand for that. So, George Teal, thank you so much. We will talk to you again very soon. And again, one more time, what is that website?
It's george4dougco.com.
Thanks.
George, F-O-R, dougco.com.
Okay, George Teal, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay, you have a good day. Before we go to break, I wanted to just mention one of my great partners. You know them, Hooters Restaurants. They have 5 locations: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. They have game day specials Monday through Thursday, and then Saturdays and Sundays they have dine-in specials, and then they have to-go specials, and then a party pack if you want to have friends come over to watch some of the sports that are on television, or, you know, next week I think is the big debate. Maybe that might be a good thing to do, is to have it to-go and have a debate watch party. More information, go to HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Professor John Eastman.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter at kimmunson.com. That is our website, Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. We would appreciate it if you would go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. At the website, be sure and sign up and buy a ticket for our Salon Series Voters Guide. That is this Monday, September 28th, 5:30 to 8 p.m. at Water's Edge Winery. Blogger and author Rick Turnquest and myself are collaborating on a voter's guide regarding all of the ballot questions on the Colorado ballot this particular election season. We have spent a lot of time to come up with our recommendations. You may agree or disagree, but we feel that this is going to be a good tool for you as you prepare and your ballot and you vote your ballot. So go to my website, kimmunson.com, to buy your ticket. Tickets are $20 plus a $3 processing fee, and then you can buy your food and drink a la carte there at Water's Edge Winery. So again, that's at kimmunson.com. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Professor John Eastman. He is the CU Visiting Professor of Conservative Thought and Policy here in Boulder. So Boulder's very lucky to have him and his wife this particular year, as well as he was part of the litigation team in 2000 in Florida regarding the things that happened there. And then he also clerked for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. John Eastman, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Kim, for having me back on. It's always a pleasure.
Well, great to have you. And I got to see you up in Grand Lake. You were the keynote speaker. Did you have a good time up in Grand Lake?
Oh, boy, we had a fabulous time. My wife spoke on Friday, and I spoke on Saturday. Our children and our new, relatively new daughter-in-law were all able to join us, and we had a terrific time. What a warm place, a beautiful place, and the people were just fabulous.
It is pretty special what they are doing up there, John, regarding a whole week celebrating the Constitution. Next year will be their 10th time to do this, and, you know, it's just amazing to me what that little community does.
It is indeed. And, you know, I mean, it's so important. We've lost a lot of understanding of our Constitution and why we have the various provisions of it that we do. And recovering that is the way to get back on the path toward prosperity and safety and civility toward one another, it seems to me.
Well, and that's the place that we want to go. And so there is something out there, this particular issue. And since you are an expert on the Constitution, I thought you're the guys to ask about this. There's, you know, out there, pundits are saying that perhaps if the election results are dragged out for the 2020 presidential election, that ultimately Nancy Pelosi could become president. What's your thoughts on that, Professor Eastman?
Well, it's possible, but it's a long shot. So what would happen is, there not be any candidate that gets a majority of the electors appointed. If it's a tie, then it goes to the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives votes state by state, not individual by individual. And right now, Republicans have 26 state lead, and Democrats have control of the delegations in 23 states, and then one state, Pennsylvania, is split. So under the current Congress, if that were to hold, if an election was tied in the Electoral College, it would get thrown into the House, and one presumes that the House would then resolve it in favor of President Trump, given the lineup. But it's not the current Congress. It's the future Congress, the one that will be elected in November. And so if two congressional seats slip, that changes that number to 25-25 or 20 if it ties in the House of Representatives, and they can't get a president elected before January 20th. And simultaneously over in the Senate, they're equally divided and unable to elect a vice president. Then it would go to the House of Representatives, Speaker of the House, and that would be Nancy Pelosi. But it's hard to imagine that scenario because even in the Senate, if there's a tie vote in the Senate, the current vice president, which would be Mike Pence, cast the deciding vote, and presumably he would vote for himself and President Trump. So it's hard to imagine it getting passed, first the presidential stage tied, and then in the House of Representatives tied or thwarted, and then in the Senate equally tied or thwarted.
So, Professor Eastman, what I'm concerned about is that, let's say Donald Trump wins on election day, but all these states that are talking about mail-in ballots, I mean, we hear stories of ballots showing up after election day, and that has actually changed the results of some of these elections. So I'm concerned about that. And then we see that Joe Biden and the Democrats have really lawyered up regarding, I think, challenging a lot of these different election results. So I'm concerned about that, Professor Eastman.
I am concerned about that as well. The push for all absentee and mailing to everybody on the voter rolls, whether they've requested an absentee or not, is such an opportunity for fraud. And look, there's so much at stake. I have no doubt, certainly, that the folks on the Democrat side, we've got proof of this. We have proof of it in New Mexico's congressional district last time. We've got proof of it in a Georgia district. We've got proof of it in a Maryland congressional district. We've got a number of proofs of use of absentee ballots or multiple voting to steal an election. I have no doubt that there are plans in place to try and do that. The question is whether the Trump team can lawyer up enough themselves to try and thwart those efforts at stealing the election.
When we look at the amount of money, though, that's coming in on the Democrat side, it is absolutely astounding. And so even though President Trump is a wealthy man, and I think he's been doing a good job fundraising, the Democrats have a significant amount of money to pay people to do this.
Well, they do. And Republicans have a volunteer network of lawyers. So we'll see which is better, the hired mercenaries or the committed volunteers.
You know, one other point I wanted to make on this this mail-in voting, and you made a distinction. There's a difference between requesting your absentee ballot and mailing the state mailing a ballot to every registered voter. And just think about the cost to do that. But it, as you mentioned, I think that it is a real opportunity for fraud. Now, some counties I know are very careful about, you know, verifying signatures. But yet I think that there might be other counties that might not be so careful. And so it is it's a huge opportunity for fraud at that particular point. And the other thing, Professor Eastman, is a state that has not been doing mail-in ballots. To think at this particular point in time that they could actually do that, you know, and get that program up and running, it takes years to really get a good mail-in voting program put together. Well, there's no way it could happen.
You said several things there that are worthy of comment and focus. So the first is absentee ballot, and I think it's important to remind ourselves of the history of the absentee ballot or the vote by mail ballot. Some people are elderly and confined to home, or wheelchair bound and have difficulty getting to the polls. And so the states, in their generosity and wanting to have civic participation by as many people as possible, allowed for them to apply for an absentee ballot. And then they or a close family member would return that ballot. Gradually, some states like California allowed anybody to apply for an absentee ballot for any reason, but you still had to return it yourself or an immediate family member. What California did in 2018, that is now becoming the model by COVID-related orders, is allow anybody to request a ballot and allow anybody to return it. So that creates a potential for fraud where the actual voter may not even have known somebody applied for them for a ballot. But it also creates a huge potential for intimidation. If some union thug shows up at your door and says, here's your ballot, I'm going to watch how you voted and I'll take it in for you. That's the anonymity of voting is lost. Wow. With this. And then, of course, we know the voter rolls are terribly inaccurate. There's a study that was just published last week by the Public Interest Legal Foundation. They have conducted the most massive voter roll comparison study in our history, and they found millions of people that are on the rolls double times or have been voting double times in two different states, or have died. Some of them who have registered to vote after they died and then continue to vote. It's this kind of potential for fraud that is much easier to pull off with an absentee vote system than a vote-in-person system.
Wow. So what do we do about this, Professor Eastman?
Well, we're going to have to watch. We're going to have people in every precinct watching these things. And your question about signatures is also a good one. We had a ballot initiative effort a few years ago that was hostile to the state government, right? They were going to take some power away from the state government and send it back to the local counties or regional governments to try and break the power of the state government. And simultaneously, our paid signature gatherers were collecting signatures on another initiative that had nothing to do with state government. The same two sets of petitions with the same people signing them outside of the Safeway or the Ralph's grocery stores end up getting into the county clerks. And the rate of invalid signature determinations by the county clerks was much higher on the anti-government initiative than it was on the other one.
Oh, my gosh. That is an interesting thing. Yeah.
The level of discretion that is given to these county clerks, who are often making these judgments without anybody looking over their shoulders, is extraordinary. And what that means is we've got to have somebody in every single precinct counting and watching over the shoulder of every single ballot that goes through.
And so Republicans need to volunteer to be election judges, and we'll get information on that for folks. And then also people need to, they can actually in Colorado track their ballot. So make sure that you track your ballot. I would not recommend to return it by mail. Put it in one of the ballot boxes and then make sure that it has been registered, that it has come in and it's been counted. So, Professor John Eastman, I have a feeling we're going to have more conversations between now and Election Day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's probably going to carry on into December as well, so be ready.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon, Professor Eastman.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. And being ready, on the line with me is Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. So had you really thought about a President Pelosi, Jason McBride?
Well, I try to think about it as little as possible.
Maybe the market was thinking about it yesterday. It had a rough day yesterday.
No, if it had been thinking about that, it would have been down 10,000 points.
So on that note, it's probably good to have a defensive posture with maybe some of your money. It would be good for people to sit down and probably do a portfolio checkup with you, because I think it's going to be pretty interesting between now and Election Day. And as Professor Eastman said, you know, it may drag out even to December, which is astonishing to me, Jason.
Well, yeah, it could. And you remember with the whole Bush-Gore debacle, I mean, the markets were very unsettled during that time. You know, we didn't have quite the amount of radicalism at that time that we're facing now. And yeah, I could drag out. And if it does, I think that's going to be difficult on the markets. You know, it looks like we're running into some difficulty right now. And I don't know what all the reasons are, Kim. I think, yeah, part of it's just nervousness about election chaos. Part of it's, you know, uncertainty about who would be elected. But yeah, I mean, we saw another pretty large sell-off yesterday. The markets came down. I mean, and you had mentioned a few days ago, and we didn't get a chance to get to it, Kim, about this Nikola Corporation, which is kind of like another Tesla. Well, now, you know, they're being attacked by short sellers who will say anything to try to get the price of the stock to go down. So first, you've got to take a lot of this with a grain of salt. But the, you know, the CEO of the company stepped down after he was accused of fraud, again, accused by a group of short sellers who want the stock to go lower. But yeah, that stock was up at like $54. They just got a deal with GM. This is just back on September 8th, Kim. And this morning it looks to open up at about $19, which shows you just how fast, quote, hot stock that everybody's talking about, that is a company that has no revenues, no earnings, and really, you know, not that much going on yet. You know, how quick the price can evaporate, which it has on something like this.
And they are an electric truck manufacturer, right, Jason?
Right. Yeah, I mean, the truck that they plan to manufacture, I mean, it's actually looks really cool. And apparently, you know, they did get a deal with General Motors, where GM is going to manufacture the truck for them and take a big stake in the company. Even after this bad news came out, GM, at least for now, has said they're going to stick with the deal. But again, you know, I would have hate to got too excited on the day of the GM deal. Bought the stock at $50, and now I'm sitting here looking at it opening at 19 this morning, just that quick.
Yeah, that's so. I mean, if people have a, you know, the wherewithal to you know, maybe have part of their portfolio in that kind of a situation, you know, everybody's an individual, and that's why I think people should sit down and talk with you, Jason, and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management, and just do a portfolio checkup. Doesn't hurt. It doesn't cost anything. And if you guys think that things are good, you say that, and I really appreciate that. So, Jason, people can reach you over at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thank you so much. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, Lyle Laverty is in studio with me. He is the former Assistant Secretary of the Interior. We're going to talk about these fires in the West and forest management. You will not want to miss that. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you will get the first look at all of the upcoming guests, our most recent podcasts, our most recent op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And be sure and go to the website and sign up for our Salon Series Voters Guide event this upcoming Monday, September 28th, 5:30 to 8 p.m. at Water's Edge Winery. You can purchase your tickets there. They're $20 plus a $3 processing fee. And then over at the winery, you can order your food a la carte, food and drink a la carte. We would love to have you join us. We will be cutting ticket sales off at a certain number, but would love to have you join us. In studio with me is Lyle Laverty. He is the former Assistant Secretary of the Interior, and he is the perfect person to talk about these fires in the West and forest management. Patty has pulled some of these headlines just recently. This is from the Denver Channel. It says, mandatory evacuations ordered in the Cameron Peak Fire. Then the steamboat pilot says the Middle Fork Fire reaches over 6,000 acres. And then Foundation for Economic Education says, why are there so many wildfires in California but few in the southeastern United States? Lyle Laverty, you are the person to talk to. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim. Good to be here.
You know, it is on the evening news, and it's heartbreaking what has been happening out in California and here in Colorado as well. But it doesn't have to be that way, does it, Lyle?
No, it doesn't, Kim. And the challenge comes back to active management. And as we look at, you know, what needs to be done and what can be done, we know that we can make a difference in fire behavior. The challenges that we have come back to the fact that we have to have the corporate will as a community, as a nation, to address the conditions that cause fire. These big catastrophic high intensity fires that we're watching every night on the news.
Well, I find it so interesting that California, that has been moving towards, and I think I just saw a headline, zero emissions from cars. I think they want to get people out of their vehicles. And so they've done all kinds of draconian rules and regulations. And Colorado is becoming California wannabes on that. But when I see, you know, all the smoke in the air from both our fires and in California, I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's probably not very good for the air.
it's a great point. And sort of as we were talking earlier, the Cameron Peak Fire right here in Colorado, some rough calculations, has probably produced well over 100 million tons of carbon. The as we mentioned, that Dr. Cog has estimated that auto emissions just here in the Front Range would equal about 15 million tons a year. So just in this 3 or 4 week period that we've been watching the Cameron Peak Fire, we've put more carbon in the air than we're going to find in almost 10 years.
So on that point, for those people that don't know what we're talking about, Dr. Cog is the Denver Regional Council of Governments. And I think initially, at least that was always my understanding, that one of their jobs is that they would receive from the federal government, the federal gas tax money, Colorado's portion, or, you know, their regional portion of that, and then they would decide kind of what to do with that. They have really moved to, and it's more of a bureaucratic organization. They have representatives from each of the cities and towns and counties there, but they're not elected to Dr. Cog. So it's a bureaucratic agency that actually I've heard that they would like to try to become a taxing authority as well, which would not be a good idea at all. But one of the things that the people that have taken that over is they are all over wanting to get everyday people into trains and onto bicycles and out of their cars. So your point is, and they always talk about the air in doing that, is that Dr. Cog, in 1 year, auto emissions in the Front Range is about, you said, 15 million
that's correct.
Tons. But over here, the Cameron Fire, within 4 weeks, is 100 million tons of this. So it seems like if we were really serious about the air, we'd start to get really serious about these forest fires, Lyle Laverty.
Well, that's exactly right, Kim. And the opportunity that we have, and we know that we can make a difference in terms of fire behavior by reducing the fuels. And that comes back to actively managing these landscapes across the country. Yeah, today, we have more trees than we had 100 years ago in America. And that's part of our problem, is that we've got this incredible intensity and density of the number of trees per acre, that when you get those ignitions, that leads us to the evening news, that structure. Historically, we used to have a lot of real low-intensity fires that would burn every year, and we'd keep that vegetation down. But because we've done such a poor job of actively managing these landscapes for the last 100 years, we've changed the structure of that landscape, and we get these large fires. So if we can develop the corporate will as a nation to go back and actively manage these lands, we can make a difference on this. We're never going to eliminate fire, but we can. We know that we can reduce the effects of fire. We can create resilient communities, resilient watersheds that are so important to all of us in our daily life.
So why haven't we been managing the forests responsibly, I would say?
Well, it all comes down to priorities. You know, there used to be the commercial, the Fram oil filter, pay me now or pay me later. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think because we've failed to make the investments to actively manage these lands, you know, we've lost it, and now we're paying the price. And when you watch the effects of these fires across the West, not only just in California, but Oregon, Washington, here in Colorado, they're big impacts, and we can make a difference. It comes back to the fact that we need to be aggressive. The Forest Service spends about 60% of their budget, almost a $4 or $5 billion budget. 60% of that goes for fire suppression. So when you're spending that kind of money on suppression costs,
Does suppression mean fighting fires?
Fighting fires, putting them out.
Okay.
When you're spending that kind of money on suppression, you can't do some of the other things that need to be done, such as proactively, actively managing these landscapes. So it used to be that 16% of the Forest Service budget was going to fire suppression. Now we're at 60%.
Wow.
So it's, you know, you don't have to be an economist to figure out what the effects of that is in terms of our inability to actively manage these landscapes. So, you know, we've got to do some balancing. You know, there's a number of tools that we can use. Prescribed fire is a big one. I think you mentioned a little bit of the Southeast. Mm-hmm. The Southeast is very aggressive in terms of prescribed fire. And you can't put prescribed fire on the ground until you do some active management to get the lands in conditions that can accept that. So it's one of those catch-22 kinds of things, but we know that we can make a difference.
Okay. Lyle Laverty, former Assistant Secretary of the Interior. Let's go to break. I'd love to have you explain what prescribed fire is. I think I know what that might mean, but let's go to break. When we come back, we'll have you define that for us. Stay tuned.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur, She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests and all the things that we are doing. And also at the website right now, you can sign up for our event on Monday night, this coming Monday night, 5:30 to 8, at Water's Edge Winery, where Rick Turnquest and I will present our voter's guide on all of the amendments and propositions that are on the Colorado ballot. We are doing an extensive, thorough investigation of each of these. You may agree or disagree. That is just fine, but it is going to be probably, I think, the best tool in your toolbox as you sit down with your ballot and make your decision on how you're going to vote on these things this particular election season. In line with, or in, on, not on the line with me, in studio with me is Lyle Laverty. He is the former Assistant Secretary of the Interior. And the fires, forest fires, it's everybody's concerned about it. But you mentioned something, prescribed fires, and this goes back to this piece that Patty had found from Foundation for Economic Education, that there are so many wildfires in California, but fewer in the southeastern United States, and you said prescribed fire. So what is that, Lyle?
Kim, prescribed fire is simply a forest management tool that allows you to reduce the fuel loading on the ground. And it's a fire that is set under the kind of conditions where you can control and manage that. And the objective and the outcome is to reduce the fuel loading. The Southeast, they burn thousands of acres each year in a managed condition. And as a result of that, they're able to reduce some of those fuel loadings that that keep these large fires from, or the fuels from accumulating, that create these high intensity fires. So it's a tool that's been used across the West for decades.
But they have not really been using it so much now in California or in Colorado, or these states that are having these. You said the intensity of these fires. So for example, you know, people having to leave Cameron Peak. You know, people are having to evacuate because of the intensity of these fires.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, the key is to keep as many of the tools in the toolbox as you can. And prescribed fire is one tool that's in the toolbox of forest managers. If we can use those tools at the appropriate time and the appropriate conditions, we can begin to make a reduction in that fuel loading. So it's a great tool.
Okay, so this is my elephant in the room question then. Some of these tools have been kind of taken out of the toolbox, and I think it's because of the environmental movement. So they've said that they care about the environment, but in essence, the consequences of that have been these very intense fires that are very difficult to get under control, loss of life. I think that that's what's happened, is that has been removed in some of these areas from the toolbox.
Well, it has been. And even here in Colorado, you know, we've had that tool taken away. And so not having that tool constrains it, almost to like tying one hand behind your back trying to hang wallpaper. It just becomes...
I can't do it with two hands.
It becomes a real challenge. And I think as we look at the situation that we have here in Colorado, you know, we want to be able to be aggressive and use every possible tool to be most efficient in terms of how do we reduce the fuel loading and the risk to communities. One half of the population of Colorado lives in this wildland urban interface. This is some numbers that have come from the Colorado State Forest Service. So when you think of the challenge that we have, we've got half the population living in an at-risk environment, and we need to be looking at every possible tool that we can aggressively go after and reduce that risk of fire for these communities. And the watersheds, you know, Denver Water has probably spent probably close to $100 million, you know, cleaning the reservoirs from the effects of wildfire, whether it goes back to Buffalo Creek almost 25 years ago or the Haven fire or High Meadow fire, all these fires, these have huge impacts on all of us. And we need to be looking at how can we create the corporate will as a state to say we've got to do something different than what we're doing right now.
Are you hearing anything? I affectionately call them PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties. Are you hearing any rumblings that maybe somebody might want to take a real serious look at this, kind of put politics aside, and really take be serious about, if we're serious about, protecting property, protecting life, protecting our air? Are you hearing anybody start to talk about this?
Kim, we are, yes. I serve on the Forest Health Advisory Committee for Colorado, and that really is one of the key subjects right now is what can we do to advance the idea of wildfire mitigation so that we can create resilient communities or resilient watersheds. And, the watershed community is coming alive, so I think we're finding more and more communities. The community of Evergreen is really aggressive looking at how can they bring the community together to make a difference in terms of reducing the risk. We've got thousands and thousands of people who live up in that community. Mm-hmm. They're all at risk. So,
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about politics on this, though. So California, they are moving towards being, totally renewable by a certain day. Colorado says that we're going to try to do that as well. So it would seem to make sense that would be a place where the air would be really clean, and actually it's not because of these forest fires. The air is just terrible because of all the carbon that's been burned and has been emitted because through these fires. And just I think I want to make a point on this is that reliable, affordable, and efficient energy and responsible energy is where we really want to be. And if, in fact, we were all still burning fireplaces to cook and keep our homes warm, that would not be good for the air. And so, fossil fuels have really cleaned the air up significantly, and we've seen that with what is, happening with the fires in California. But apparently Governor Newsom and Kamala Harris did a photo op at a home I don't see the exact date. But anyway, they did a photo op and walking around a burned out house. And somebody saw that, and it was in the Fresno County, I guess. And he realized it was his parents' house. His name's Trampas Patton. He said he recognized the photos that they had out there as the remains of his parents' home. And he was furious that they took the fact that his parents' home had been burned and they used it as a photo op to say that it happened because of climate change. What would you say to that, Lyle?
Well, I think the idea when you go back to looking at fire behavior, the effects come about because of fuel loading. And we can make a difference on fuel loading. Climate change is certainly having an effect on, perhaps on temperatures, and we've had extended droughts. But the real factor comes back to how do we manage the fuel? If you can eliminate the fuel as part of that fire triangle, you can make a difference. And I think that I know that we can make a difference by reducing the fuel loading. We can deal with the changes. We can create resilient landscapes that address the changes that are taking place because of climate.
Okay. And what is the fire triangle?
Oh, the fire triangle. That's a great question. I love it. this is the science behind fire.
Okay.
it's based on the idea that you have fuels, you have kind of the heat component, and then you have oxygen. And if you take any one of those away, that collapses fire. So if you watch the evening news and you see those big air tankers dropping, they're trying to reduce the heat and they're trying to reduce the oxygen level. So that's the essence of the science behind fire.
Okay. Well, Lyle Laverty, just what would be just your quick final thought?
We need to be able to develop a community support for actively managing these landscapes that we have here in Colorado. And if we can't do that, we're going to watch this happen again and again. We could be experiencing the same thing that's happening at the Bear Fire in California. It could be happening right here in Colorado.
And we can do something about it, so we should, Lyle Laverty.
Yeah, thank you, Kim.
Okay. And, you know, this show comes to you because of all of my great partners, and I just wanted to mention Castlegate Knife and Tool, which is located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They are a family-owned business. It's a great store. I'd recommend that you check it out. They're open 7 days a week. They have all kinds of knives. I need to get a utility knife, so I need to talk to Hal Van Herkey about that. But I so thank all of my partners that bring this show to you, and I know that you appreciate all this great information. It's been great to have Lyle Laverty in studio with me as well. And we can do something about these fires, my friends. It does not have to be this way. We do not have to see this destruction of our of private property and the destruction of our forests. And I'm concerned about the lives of our firefighters with the intensity of these fires. It does not have to be this way. And Lyle Laverty, it's just, I'm so grateful that you've been in studio today.
Thanks, Kim.
So our quote for today is from Robert Louis Stevenson, and he said, "It is not so much for its beauty that the forest makes a claim upon men's hearts as for that subtle something, that quality of air, that emanation from old trees that so wonderfully changes and renews a weary spirit." So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.